If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the Supreme Beloved. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is, why do some see, hear, and experience certain things, whereas others may not? Why is that? So if you're ready, take a deep breath and call yourself forward into the light of your Supreme Being. Let it flood your whole body. Let it illumine your mind. And bring to bear the fullness of your intention to manifest the all that you can possibly bring forward through your body-mind complex. And ask that anything that you don't need to carry that could be lifted and cleared through grace, as you take a deep breath and release it, let it go at this time. Deep breath. Learn how to call forward the light and flush all of your levels and ask that whatever you don't have to carry, bear, work through, that it could be lifted if it is for your highest spiritual good. There is no need to be encumbered unnecessarily with the things that actually don't matter much at all, which is just about everything here. So why is it that some people can see and hear spiritually, whereas others do not? Well, we all see what we really want to see, whatever agrees with our point of view, our beliefs, and so on. In other words, wherever we have an interest in something, we'll tend to notice it everywhere. We see what we have as a matching level of consciousness. So here's a big key. For anything or anyone to become visible in your experiential reality, you must be able to match the same frequency and vibration. Did you get that? What you see has a direct correspondence to the vibration through which you're seeing. For anything or anyone to become visible to you, you must match whatever that is with the same frequency and vibration. Please bear that in mind. That answers every question anyone could possibly ask about why don't I have these experiences, or why does so-and-so see this and I don't, or why is so-and-so having the visions and all of these wonderful experiences and I'm not, or why do I have all these incredible experiences and I'm sharing life with another person and they're clueless? Many of you are in families like that or have spouses like that. So you only see what you've made room for inside of yourself. We see through our personal creations, and we each live in our own populated universe, populated by our beliefs, our conditioning, our training, our expectation, our predilection, our karma, our past impressions of consciousness. all of that serves as a filter to what we allow into our recognition. And that's what it is. It's recognition of what's already there. All of the creation beneath the realm of the soul plane is already completed. You're not seeing anything new. You're only recognizing what is already there. How do you do that? When you begin to transcend certain levels of limitation, you enter into greater fields of revelation. You simply decompress, as it were, from deep submersion of consciousness into matter, with a gradual raising to the surface of greater and greater and greater light, like a deep sea diver. And you can't go into the light too fast or you'll get the bends, just like a deep sea diver. So that progressive decompressing and moving into the light is called initiation. And through your own spiritual effort, you initiate yourself into greater and greater fields of light, greater and greater fields of recognition of what's already there. So I'm going to lead you in a little spiritual exercise now to give you something to work with so that when we go off the air, if you want, you can practice this and work with it. It's a very short, easy, little soul travel, little soul transcendence exercise. So if you're ready, sit up straight. Again, take a deep breath. And ask for the divine light to fill, surround, and protect you. And with your next breath, go into your heart shrine. Just breathe right into the center of your chest. And you're standing inside the center of your heart shrine. And before you, there is an elevator. So walk into the elevator. And it's a beautiful elevator that's filled with golden violet light. Actually, it's an intense violet light that's sprinkled with golden flecks. And in your mind, you can sing, Anai, you, very softly. Anai, you, very softly. Just sing it silently in your mind. Anai, you. And experience the violet light as it gently and gradually begins to move the elevator, because the elevator is that violet light. And see it rising up as a column of that violet light tinged with golden flecks, right from the center of your heart all the way up through the top of your head. And as the elevator gradually ascends, the violet light begins to become more and more faint. And the golden light begins to come more and more forward. Until as you lift up to the center of your head, it's pure golden light. And the elevator gently stops. And the doors open, or rather, they simply dissolve. And you find you are standing in a realm of dazzling golden perfection. Welcome home. This is the soul realm. The realm of truth, Satchkhand, or Satyadesh. And from this gradual raising into this golden, truly a golden kingdom, you can now step out and explore and create your own experience for yourself. The soul realm takes the form of whatever you would have it be. This is where you exercise your own spiritual creativity. Yes, there's a spiritual level of creativity as much as there is a physical plane manifestation of creativity. Only as co-creative spirits with the divine spirit, we are learning how to create in the perfection of the soul, that highest level of spiritual awareness that we tap into and seek to integrate into our human lives. So ride that violet elevator. You could think of it as the elevator of grace and soul transcendence into the golden light, right up from the heart through the center of the body and out the top of your head, and enter the realm of soul. And just see what you experience. Begin to move into those levels. Now you'll notice when I lead a meditation or an integration, I never bring you back to your body, do I? And it's for the reason that we are to move into these higher levels and stay there and operate here at the same time. This is our practice time to do that. You need a physical body in order to do that. You don't move into the soul realm from the soul realm. You move into the soul realm from the human realm. And that's the important thing, is that you do it here while you have a full spectrum that represents every level of consciousness, from the most dense material, physical body, all the way up to the most transcendental monadic state of pure spirit. So practice and work with that if you'd like. So all of the levels that you're working through primarily are based in realms beneath the soul realm. For example, each chakra will open as a portal into a whole realm of experiential reality. And until you are established in the soul consciousness as an initiated soul, which means you are established there and you don't fall back from that state, you are working in the lower levels within your own personal creation that you've populated with your own manifestations of thought, emotion, imagination, visualization, desire, thoughts. Everything that has gone into your personal expression has populated your own personal universe. So that's why everything you see within and without simply represents something that you have placed there through your own exercising of consciousness. Only when you enter the soul realm as an initiate and are established there do you begin for the first time to exit your own personal creations and to enter into the real positive creations of God or the great Submad. Then you go into the first day of the rest of your real life, because you have transcended through spiritual inner awareness the realms of karma, time, mind, and the past. Because as I've said many times, everything you're seeing right now is a revisiting of what has already taken place. Only spirit is now. Everything else is in a state of becoming along a timeline. So the whole trap that keeps human consciousness human and not able to exercise conscious transcendental awareness is because of the mind. Think of the mind, the lower mind, the egoic mind, as the same as time. Think of time, mind, and money as the major trap that keeps us recycling on the planet. How is that? Well, the world believes that time equals money. You're paid for your time, the time that you put in your employment, right? You time yourself and charge according to the hour or hours that you're working. That's the time-mind connection. When you transcend the mind through any form of transcendental rapture, let's just use the word rapture, you all get the idea of being lifted out of. When you lift out of and above the level of the mind, time stops. There's no time perception when you're in meditation, when you're unconscious, when you're asleep. So the mind and time are essentially one and the same. In Sanskrit, that's called the kal power. The mental power is what in Christianity is called Satan. Same thing, same energy. It's the limiting factor that comes in when spirit and mind conjoin and the idea of separation from God arises. And that's what keeps the wheel, the Kala Chakra, the wheel of time revolving, karma and reincarnation. It's a trap. Now, the biggest hook into that trap in time-space is money. People believe that money is time and that money itself has a value, that money itself has the power to limit or free you, depending on how much or how little you have. That's a big trap. And so the monkey, or the gerbil in this case, has kept going around and around the wheel, pursuing money and wasting time and getting caught and entrapped in the labyrinth of the mind. So an initiate, a soul initiate, someone who's on the path of soul transcendence, is constantly moving beyond and above the timeline to quieting the mind and thus bringing it to a state of quiescency, clarity, limpidity, so that it becomes absolutely pellucid and clear. And you move from thinking to awareness. You just transcend thought into pure awareness, which happens when you escape the noose of time. So one's belief is a very strong determining factor in what you experience at any time, whether it's within or without. One must always have a matching internal paradigm that matches your outer experience. You could call that a mental equivalent. You have to have a corresponding mental idea or equivalent that agrees with what you want to experience. That's why truth and spirituality is protected from the unprepared because it's a completely closed system until you have done made the necessary effort, let's put it that way, to move into those levels. You can't fake it in this case. You need to put in the effort. You have to have the interest and the desire to go beyond. But when you do, nothing can stop you. Nothing can stop you then. So one's belief is a very important thing, because out of a single belief, an entire world proliferates as your experiential reality. So to see anything, you must believe, first of all, that it exists. And literally, to believe is to see. But always remember, believed is spelled be-lie. So belief always has a lie inherent in it, because it lacks direct knowing and awareness. You believe something until you've had a direct experience, and then you don't believe anymore. You know. You know. It was interesting how when Deepak Chopra was being interviewed on one of the Super Soul Sunday programs, and she asked him, she said, "Deepak, what do you believe in?" And he simply turned to her and said, "Nothing." And she said, "Nothing? We've done all this talking and you believe in nothing?" He said, "How can you believe anything? Everything you see when you open your eyes, everything in this whole world that you see and that you see through a telescope in the heavens is 0.1% of what exists." He said, "There's the known, there's the knowable, and then there's the unknowable. And out of the billions and trillions and gazillions of stars and planets and galaxies and universes populated with myriad beings, how can any of us say that we really, really know?" And so he was really answering the question, what do you know for certain? And if you stop to think about it, the only thing we could possibly say that we know for certain is that we exist. I am. That we can know for certain. I am. I exist. And beyond that, it's constant expansion and coming into greater and greater fields of light, revelation, and awareness. Now we get into big trouble when we hunker down for dear death into a set idea of how things have to be, of what is so, what is true, the only way. How many times have you heard that we exist in multiple parallel probable realities that are all going on at the same time, and the only thing that determines your experience is the choice you've made this moment, which, when you step forward into that choice, you activate one of those parallel probable realities, which, until you step forward, is invisible to you. So you have to have the wit to move into, through faith, whatever it is that you would actualize as your reality. That's why it says in the Bible, we walk by faith and not by sight. We call a thing that is not as though it were, and it shall be. That's basically what is going on here. So people all live in different creational worlds, universes of their own making. And they can't see through anything but their own filters, their own aura. That's why in the Course of Miracles, truth is twice removed when you speak it, because it has to go through your interpretive filters and through your universe of creation, heavily populated with your samskaras, and then penetrate that field of another, which they will not understand you unless they have a matching correspondency within them of what you're presenting. They have to be at that level to hear you. When Solariel, my coworker, and I were working, doing a lot of ascension workshops, and in those early days, I would often dematerialize my body so that people could see that by the raising and lowering of vibrations, you can appear and disappear. And we learned rather early on that after doing a workshop like that, we were invisible to the people on the freeway. After we had several close calls, we realized our vibration was too high. We'd go to eat in a restaurant, and we'd be sitting there, and everybody would be coming in after us and getting waited on, and we realized we were not visible. Our vibration was too high. And as soon as we learned to ask before we got in the car that our vibrations be lowered to an appropriate level to interface with the world that we were interacting in, we could then safely go into a restaurant and be seen. It would be funny. We'd be sitting there waiting and waiting for somebody to notice us. But only after we had asked for the integration and the harmonization of our vibration with that existing picture of reality did suddenly whoever would come up and say, "Oh, when did you come in? Didn't see you." So we actually become invisible to levels that we are now transcending beyond. You become, for example, invisible to the dark forces when your light has reached a certain level. They can't come into your field because, for one thing, they can't see you. And if they did somehow come into that energy field, they would fry. That's really the meaning of hell, is that people burn with a spiritual energy when they have a lot of negativity. They're fried, like those little bug zappers that you see sometimes. So vibration is everything in the spiritual realm. It's your soul signature. It's your identifying energetic. You are identified by the spiritual hierarchy, the adepts and masters, by your light. You show up only when you have a certain level of light. And light, in this case, and the vibration that we call love, are of the same vibration. The more love, and this is the pure love of the divine self, not the selfish gimme, gimme love of the solar plexus. We're talking about that pure love that doesn't want, need, or expect anything. Only the soul, the pure energy of the soul, has that agape type of love. And when that love begins to fill you, then you show up on the higher radar, so to speak, the spiritual radar. That's why nobody is ever overlooked. You show up as soon as you're ready to move beyond the world. As the Christians would say, the world, the flesh, and the devil. When you're ready to leave that behind and move into the higher realms of spiritual inner awareness, your light has reached a level where it can be seen. And what hides your light? Grievances, selfishness, negativity, ego drama, all of that. attachment to money and mind and time. And money is simply a tool which you will never, ever lack for any divinely directed purpose. You will always be equipped and supplied. So in fact, it's as if the universal atoms rearrange themselves to outpicture your specific reality at any given moment. And in actuality, they do just that, as even science has discovered. So Dr. Wayne Dyer put it this way: when you change the way you see things, the things you see change. So as an exercise, I would suggest, if you'd like, to try practicing this by seeing through as many points of view as you can think of on any given issue. Just put yourself in the opposite position from the one you would normally adopt, and look at the situation through that viewing angle, and then shift to another. If you're a dyed-in-the-world, Republican, put on the Democratic hat for a few moments and look at the world from that perspective. But practice it in as many different ways that you possibly can. This is called practicing empathy. And Sai Baba has said that we only are truly human when we have empathy, that everything else that we do is basically the same as animals. But in the practice of empathy and compassion, we transcend the brutish stage, and we start to go into the truly human stage. And then from the human stage, we must, again, lift beyond the human stage into spiritual awareness, where you become more of a superhuman. So the levels that we are perfecting right now have to do with the mind. The astral body, the emotional nature, was perfected in Atlantis. Right now, in this atomic race, we are working to attain mental polarization, where the consciousness is mainly centered in the mental body. And the challenge there is to move from intellectualism to intuition. How do you do that? By creating an inner link or bridge between the lower mind and the intuitional body or soul. And that interconnecting link is forged as you go in and out through the levels. As you practice that simple meditation that I led you in with going into the violet elevator, that's tinged with gold, he began to transmute through the violet flame those levels within yourself that are still log-jammed. And as you gradually practice going into those higher levels in that golden light, you begin to create that bridge. It's very simple, very simple. The inner bridge, as some of you know, is called the Antakarana or the Antishkarana. Same thing. Meditation is another way. And another way is logically working through problematic issues where the mind must be vigorously utilized to work through problems and solve them. Many of your big executives and CEOs and people in business and finance and other areas of just very mundane seeming life are actually working through initiatory lessons. Some of these people are initiates. Many of them are. They're very, very effective. In global work, they're always an initiate of some level. So from there, you go into abstract thought. And abstract thought is where you take a simple seed thought, like, for example, the one that Wayne Dyer I just quoted, where when you change the way you see, what you see changes. You could take that and began to go deep, 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 deep into it as a contemplation. And as you do the that deeper and deeper probing, you move beyond that logical three-dimensional approach, and you start to move into abstract thought, so that you don't just take a surface approach to something, you penetrate it deeply until it begins to open as a corridor of light. And you begin to see beyond the form, beyond the words, beyond the ideal or idea to the quintessential essence. And that's called abstract thought. And this is what leads to transcendental states, where you exit thinking itself and you move into awareness, the definite level that you move into. And at that level, you have intuitive knowing, or we could call it direct perception of that which is. So then, after mental polarization, we move into spiritual polarization, where you're centered in that soul awareness or at those intuitional levels. And then you have straight knowledge, direct knowing, and that pure, unconditional awareness. So each chakra is a portal into another realm of consciousness. And just as Jesus taught, the kingdom of heaven is within and is first experienced in the heart center. So we just keep transcending into ever unfolding more and more glorious divine worlds within worlds, and there literally is no end. So you could say that it is our conditioning that hardens into fixed points of view, and it is our conditioning that harbors and hardens into prejudicial states, which invariably lead to conflict between people and nations. So it's important that we do all possible to keep the mind open and flexible so that you dance without taking a rigid position. You dance in the light, so to speak. And you could say that the end of karma is a totally clear mind, totally centered in divine composure or presence, or quite simply, the end of karma is a quiet mind. So the divine presents through you as present presence. You simply are present as the presence divine, which looks like equanimity, direct knowingness, and clarity. The Buddhist teaching, it's called Dzogchen. Very simple state. And all this without the need of thinking or imagining. The state just simply quietly presents itself once the mind is quiet. So it's the state referred to in the Bhagavad Gita as the yogi, in doing nothing, accomplishes all things. It's not by physical action that we truly create. All creation is done from transcendental states. What you have beneath those transcendental states is imitation, but not creation. Imitation is human. Creation is divine. So as you move your spiritual inner awareness from the trap of time and mind and matter and money and busyness in the material sense, you begin to lift into that state that is truly creative at a spiritual level. And that's what we're working towards. Gradually, each of us is somewhere on that path. So in such a one, divine merger has taken place, and there's no longer an ego prompting the activity. The actions are now impersonal and transpersonally motivated. In other words, you live to serve. You're others focused. You're thinking about how to serve others. You've lost sight of yourself and your own little selfish needs. It's okay to take care of yourself so that you can help take care of others, but at some point you need to lay that self down and live like the Christ, where you lay your very life down each day, your personal life, your personal comfort, your personal preferences, and you step forward into service. And that's an ongoing intention that becomes your only way of life when you are a master. So all masters act in response to present evocation, meaning that they're called forward in response to a request that reaches them in a particular spiritual resonance. At spiritual levels, all life is one, so that response is the one responding from that sense of oneness. That's how masters live. Sai Baba, who is more than a master, he being a cosmic avatar, says that he experiences himself dwelling in the heart of every being. I mean, that's beyond any of our earthly initiations. But just to give you an example of how a fully God-realized, perfected, cosmic being experiences the self as dwelling in the hearts of all beings. One time, Sai Baba's driver had Sai Baba in the car, and they were going along the road rather fast, and he saw a snake in the road. And his choice was to put the stop real fast and put the avatar through the windshield, or swerve real fast and risk, you know, turning the car over, or running over the snake and hoping Sai Baba didn't notice, ho, 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 as if he didn't know and wasn't dwelling in the heart also of the serpent. So what happened was, when they arrived at their destination and Sai Baba got out of the car, there was a bloody imprint of the killed snake on Sai Baba's robe. And the driver gasped with horror. But just saying, every single thing in existence has as its innate core the divine principle. Nothing can live without that divine principle. Whether it's a rock, a plant, an animal, a person, a bug, everything has a spark of the divine that gives its life, that gives it life and sentiency. So Sai Baba said that when a request is made from ego levels, from personal levels of lack and neediness and desire, then one of the many postmen, as he calls it, the many devas or elemental helpers respond. We could call them the demigods and goddesses. And Sai Baba said that only selfless, egoless, pure requests reach into the purely divine levels. He said, really, we should not ask God for anything but greater purity and greater devotion. And perhaps the strength to put up with what we need to put up with to develop purity and devotion. But devotion means love of God. And that's pretty hard to do if you don't have a chosen form that represents to you God. Those of us who have looked to Sai Baba as the representative of the divine in human form, that's easy for us. We look at Sai Baba and we think, that's God. Or if you're a person who has experienced a God-realized man or woman that has literally become one with God, like Amici or Sri Ananda Moyma or Ramana Maharshi or Sri Yogananda, great souls like that have literally become where there's no ego anymore. There's just divinity, like Jesus the Christ. There's just divinity. But if you don't have that in your life to where you automatically have a God focus, then you have to take some form that you can focus on. Otherwise, you don't know where to place your mind. Sai Baba said one of the best forms that you can use is a candle flame. To use that, because he said all physical forms are going to die at some point. But the candle flame remains the same. No matter how many candles are lit from that flame, it remains the same. And likewise, no matter how many sparks are sent forth from that one effulgence that we call the Supreme Creator, that Supreme Creator is not diminished. So then take a candle flame. Or take the sound current, the hue, the anti-hue, your personal mantra. You can also focus on that. But generally speaking, you need an inner ideal to keep attuning the mind to. This is the divine. You could imagine the divine self in the center of your skull, sitting like a golden Buddha right in the center of your head. So it's important to have the name and the form, the mantra and the yantra. Yantra's form, mantra's name, and tantra is the relationship between the two, which forms the connective link or the inner consciousness or antahkarana. So it's a very scientific thing that we're doing here in the sense that we're using time-honored approaches that have produced God realization in countless yogis and yoginis in the past, and men and women, because you don't necessarily have to become a yogi or a yogini. But in the real sense, everybody who has a divine linkage or union with God is a yogi or a yogini. So it doesn't mean that you have to sit in a cave. In fact, today you're not. You're going to be working in the world if you're an initiate. Because in other lifetimes, you were sitting in caves. This time, you have to work in the world of time, matter, money, all of that. Those are your tests. So, we're working to become more and more detached from attachment to the personal, limited self. We're sacrificing that more and more. We're letting that go. So that which is greater can live through us and manifest through us and be present through us. And in doing that, we are shifting the paradigm on the planet into what is called the Aquarian Age, where we'll have the Lord Christ himself dwelling with us, not as a guru, not as someone that you can put your power out on again, but one who will teach humanity to live divinely in the human state. And through each one of the human beings on this planet, gradually a world of justice and the equal sharing of the world's goods will eventuate. And we all have a part in that. You will notice in the world, there are always different levels of consciousness. There has to be. Every ashram has disciples and initiates at all different levels. It's meant to be that way. We're meant to carry multiple different variations of vibration and frequency to form the grand harmonic. The music of the spheres is made up of each of our individual soul tones. And a glorious paean of praise, a glorious ever-ascending crescendo of adoration, which we offer as we live true to ourselves and walk as clearly as we possibly can in the light of our inner spiritual awareness. We exercise discernment, and we move through life in a very normal way, but in a very extraordinary connection with the divine. We begin to own our divinity and let go of any illusion that we're anything other than that. And so we're all part of stepping that frequency of the kingdom of heaven down into the lowest substratum of creation, so that the glory of God, as it says very beautifully in the scriptures, will cover the earth as the waters cover the sea. Imagine that. The glory of God will cover the earth as the waters cover the sea. How? Through you and me. Through us. Through the collective humanity. Awakening here and there, each one in their own way, timing, pace, gradually, some phenomenally now, others later. Like popcorn, you know, some corn pops right away to the top. Others, it takes longer for the fire to pop those kernels. But sooner or later, we all pop free of the illusion of personal limitation and limited selfhood. So that is something to take on board and to remember that to see anything, whether it's a person, a manifestation of God, to have a divine vision, anything whatsoever, you must match what you would see with the equivalent level of vibration. Always remember that. What you see is what you be. It's always a direct correlation. So if you want to see more of God, then divest yourself of those things that clog your universe. Begin to jettison the baggage of misplaced loyalty and identification. Begin to jettison self-doubt and all of that, and make more room for the divine, and court and woo the divine, and find ways to import recognition of the divinity inherent in all people, inherent in all life. Work on it. Find ways to do that. Each of us must forge our own way to liberation. And so I hope this has been helpful to you. It's a topic that we're probably going to need to visit again and again until we understand that your state of consciousness manifests as your reality. That's all it is your reality in which you live and experience until you grow beyond it into your true divine self. So let's go out chanting on IHU. Deep breath. On IHU. Blessings and grace to each one of you. Adonai.